Hello, this is Dr. Michelle Saltarelli with Autumn Oak Speech, Voice, and Hearing, and this is our podcast, Here to Speak. With this podcast, we'll be talking about anything related to speech, hearing, business, and professional development / professional etiquette. Thanks for joining. Let's talk about play and the importance of play with our children. I think there's kind of a trend right now, and I believe that this trend has been going on probably for decades, because now my boys are teenagers, and I know that during their infancy and toddler years, I saw this. And it didn't start then, but it's definitely continuing. And what I'm speaking about is, for some reason, the focus and the importance of play with our children, or having our children play instead of going to a little daycare that has a strict curriculum for a toddler, how that is really the latter, the curriculum, is highly regarded and sought, whereas the play, not so much. And that's alarming to me. And it has been alarming to me for a long time. You know, we understand my education is in speech pathology and audiology. So I had to take child development courses and special ed courses and anatomy and, you know, that kind of stuff. So I had to learn the importance of play in general. And the best way for our babies to learn is through play. So I am using my tools right now, so excuse me because I don't have this memorized, but I read a lot. And there's a few books that are especially just stays with me. Those little comments stick with you. So for example, today's book that I'm gonna refer to was written by Warren Berger. And his thing is a more beautiful question. It's the power of inquiry to spark breakthrough ideas. But a more beautiful question by Warren Berger. So a lot of what I say today, I'm going to reference Mr. Berger, because he took the time to speak to various people to figure out how do we essentially become critical thinkers. How do we develop creativity and ideas? And it goes right back to those super early years where kids are allowed to play. Yeah, not groundbreaking. But why did all of a sudden is it more important to teach a little toddler curriculum and start giving them studies? And researchers, for example, so sorry, you're going to hear my pages too. So researchers like Allison Gnick, she found that it's in America, it's because of parents wanting their kids to be the best. But why do parents want that? Is it a reflection of the child themselves? Or is it more selfish and individualized, saying that, look at what I did with my child? So these are questions you really need to ask yourself. I can tell you this, just knowing that my education, and I had my first child during my residency, and I had to work very, very long hours at Methodist, which I don't regret. I had to put my time in, right? But I needed somebody to watch my little infant child for about 6 months, because I think I had 6 more months left to my curriculum for that. And I wasn't looking, but these places were happy to tell me what kind of curriculum they followed for their toddlers and then as it went on. And I was really just looking for somebody to love my baby and give him lots of love and comfort and take care of him and feed him and let him just explore. That's what I needed for my child. And that's what I got because I hired a sitter. But yes, it was a lot of, let me show you what our curriculum looks like. And that's fine. And I'm not saying that that's not good per se. I mean, it's definitely not, it's not necessarily good for our children. But what's happening is these businesses are running like business and the market is asking for curriculums. So they're putting out curriculums. But really, do we need that? No, we don't. So what happens when, you know, what we're finding is when an infant or a baby or a toddler or even, you know, into those early elementary years, what happens is the best way for a child to learn is through play and exploration. And then we know that that's going to pique their curiosity and pique their ideas and their learning. So we know that we need to encourage, you know, and teach or even tolerate questioning. And it's quite interesting because in this book, what we find is that, you know, a child will ask about 100 questions a day. And that's a really good thing because in this book, they equate these little people as just your typical scientists, because that's what scientists do, right? Anybody that's in research, we ask why. Why is that happening? And we try to get our hypothesis together, and then we start the experiments to see what data we collect to figure out why this is happening the way it is. That's a scientist. That's what we do with our research. Kids are naturally born that way to do this stuff. So hence, I want to say it was a three-year-old, the little preschoolers that are three-year-olds. And now you can always correct me. It's in the book itself. But the three-year-olds, they ask up to 100 questions a day per day to their parents, Now, if they're asking you the same question again and again, that's because you haven't quite, they haven't quite, they, first, A, they don't have the language to say, hey, I still don't understand that. And two, or hey, you're not really listening to me. You're kind of like just kind of pushing off my question. Or three, like, hey, I need some more information. There's something that I'm missing here. So that's why it's redundant at times if they keep on asking the same question. But it is imperative as for us as a parent to not shut it down, not to unconsciously, give them negative reinforcement, which will squelch or reduce the behavior of inquiry and questioning because they need to learn. And unfortunately, that's what we're seeing. So that negative enforcement, the negative reinforcement, like, I'll answer it later. Can you just watch TV? Just play with your toys. That's all negative reinforcement. Positive reinforcement would look like an answer. Hey, that's a good question. I don't know that answer, and it's okay. We need to teach our kids that we don't always have the answer. We got to teach our kids reality. And by teaching them that you're okay not understanding or not knowing yourself, but hey, you're going to go ahead and do some personal learning and investigate. Like, I mean, Google's right on the phone. Look it up and teach your child how to find the answers themselves. But those types of activities will not only give them great information and, as you know, and increase the amount of questioning, inquiry, curiosity, and learning, it will also show your child how to problem solve and how to figure things out. And that it's okay not to have the right answer. What is best is to have the right question. And even my students, my master level students that we teach at the clinic, need to be personal self-learners. And we're finding that sometimes that has to be retaught. That's not good. We need critical thinkers in this world. Okay, so let's go on to show. So this is important in regards to inquiry and investigation and exploration that our kids are doing with the environment around them. Let them play. Let them make mistakes as long as they're safe. Don't go in and rescue them. Let them learn from what they just did so that they can, oh, okay, that wasn't such a good idea. I just smashed my fingers. That hurt. I won't do that again. That kind of stuff. I mean, of course, be there to help them. But sometimes we're overcompensating and not really allowing our child to figure this out themselves. And it's not setting them up for success, even at the master's level of education, because those people want me to give them the answers and they don't want to seek the answers themselves. And that's not good critical thinking or problem solving. And that's not, and that those two things are needed for, just to even go beyond us in education, for democratic society. Do we see how all of this is kind of playing out and unfolding? So let's go back. So I made all my notes because I really loved it. I think it's actually, I can't even remember what chapter it was. But let's see. So kids, we already discussed, they like to learn because they're scientists. Oh, let's go back to the question. They ask 100 questions a day. By the time a child is in middle school, pretty much they stop asking questions. Yeah. So, and that's because, unfortunately, and this is all from, like I said, the research. She's a child psychologist, Allison Gunick. What happens is, our educational system in the public setting is getting to be like, I have to give you all this information because we're about to take a standardized test to see how good of a teacher I am. So I need you to learn X, Y, and Z. And in order for me to teach that, I just have to give it to you and you have to learn it and memorize it. I don't have time for questions. And I don't have time to spark your creativity and your inquiries. So there we go. So, and teachers, it's quite interesting. They did a study with teachers. And what happened was, there's my study. This was by Meyer. Her name is, I think, Deborah Meyer. And she's like, This book was published, I want to say, in 2013, and she was in her 80s. But she was a pretty amazing educator and researcher. But what happened was she found that when teachers... Oh, I'm sorry. Let me go back to that. This was a study. Myers is amazing. We're going to talk about Myers studies. We're going to talk about Susan Ingalls from William College studies right now. So she did a study. She gave a set of teachers, no guidelines. Said, I need you to teach science, and there's no guidelines. You just teach these kids science. And then the other set of teachers were given guidelines. So what we found is that the teachers that were given no guidelines, but hey, this is your topic, they invited curiosity and learning. And then the teachers that were given guidelines, they actually would be like, wait a minute, they don't have time for these inquiries and curiosities. So they'd be, wait a minute, that's not on the instructions. So we're not going to go there. Again, negative reinforcement, even though it doesn't sound bad, but still it's negative reinforcement. I don't have time for your question. It can possibly, depending on our children, be a little bit embarrassing. So that teacher is setting up that kind of scenario. And if that child is a little more sensitive than others or just even sensitive, they're not going to ask again. That's embarrassing. So what she found, Susan Engel found, was that teachers were very susceptible to external influences. they were less receptive to students' ideas and inquiries when they are given guidelines. Now, here in Texas, we call it benchmarks. Yeah. So when you have to follow state-mandated regulatory things, they are going to absolutely follow that. But unfortunately, it squelches creativity, ideas, inquiries. And it's essentially, let me give you all the information and you're going to memorize it. So let's go on to Myers. Myers, it was interesting. She's really good. What she saw and what she sees with education and teaching is that you want to teach skepticism and empathy. So, and I 100% agree with this. Skepticism is not only for others. I think in society today, I think we've mastered that. Unfortunately, being skeptical of others or trying to disprove others all the time. I mean, social media makes a whole market of that. It's why I don't really watch it, but I have to produce this. I know it's a paradox, but here we go. It's really skepticism. What she's talking about, what Meyer's talking about, is skepticism of ourself. I always term it as self-reflection. That's what I try to teach to my students, employees, and my children. Hey, you need to look into yourself first to see what caused whatever scenario, and you learn from that. But that's what she's saying. She's saying, know that we may be wrong. Wow. yes. Know that you're wrong and try to understand. This is where the empathy comes from. Try to understand another point of view. That's honestly in what she continues to go on. Now, remember, she's an educator and she's talking about schools. But she went on to say, essentially, this is the cornerstone to democracy. Skepticism, I might be wrong. Empathy, hey, how did you arrive to that point? Can you share that with me? What? I don't know. I mean, I only hear from my friends and colleagues that right now it's a lot of right fighting. And in my house with sometimes my teenagers and then my pre-adolescent, those boys, it was a lot of right fighting. Hey, I am right. And I'm going to shove this idea down your throat. Now with my children, I'm like, absolutely not. Now you're grounded. With the public, it seems to be applauded, respected. And these people want to vote. That is very scary. Very scary. Yeah. Non-biased opinions or open mind, or like Dr. Meyer says, skepticism and empathy is what we should be teaching. This leads to critical thinkers and problem solving. Good critical thinkers and problem solvers. Not those that think they're good and then write fight and then think they're so smart and wonderful and hence they're doing podcasts on how to do whatever, X, Y, and Z. No, what we want per Brown and Wagner, what we want through the educational system, what we want through parents facilitating learning, what we want from therapists working with our children and trying to make sure that their skill sets are within average. We want them to be through the context of play. First of all, to retain the information better and more, not just to memorize it, but to really, truly understand it and be able to do it. And play helps us to do that because that's how our kids learn. And play is so important. But through curiosity and play and developing those new ideas and more questions, what we get and gain are self-learners. Creative people, resourceful people who adapt easily to constant change. That's from Brown and Wagner in that book. And yeah, and that's what we need in today's world. Questioning and learning to be a critical thinker. But unfortunately, I have students coming in from other universities across the nation. that don't even have this. They're master level students. That means they're somewhere in their 20s, probably. And I don't see self-learners creative and resourceful all the time. I have to teach that and expect that. And then with the mentality of today, I get pushback because it's everybody else's fault, not theirs. So when it comes to play and therapy, and that's what we do with our little ones, and even our early school age kids, it's all in the context of play. Because we know they're going to retain so much more than if we just lecture to them all day and expect them to regurgitate what they learn. They're not going to carry it over. We're going to get progress better in the former way. So parents, please understand that. Play is important. Play will make your baby a critical self-learner, you know, creative, resourceful person that adapts. Thank you for listening. Thank you for listening. This podcast was brought to you by Autumn Oak Speech, Voice, and Hearing. If you have any questions or comments, please share for the next podcast.